Good morning. In Luke 2 it says, "She wrapped him in cloth and placed him in manger because there was no room for them in the inn." So I think an appropriate question to ask ourselves is there room in your inn? It's only a little bit over 2 more weeks, right, to the end of the year. Another tumultuous year. Many things have happened, and actually it's a coming, you know, in terms of natural disasters and in terms of terror attacks. If you go out and look at my car, I think you still find a little bit of snow and ice on top of my car. And you probably guessed where I went the last few days. My daughter Stephanie, she lives in Baltimore, but she loves skiing. So she came up Wednesday night, and Thursday we drove up to Vermont. We left early. We left around 8 o'clock in the morning, so we kind of beat the rain here. We kind of beat the ice going through upstate New York. So when we got there, we were in a restaurant, and the people there said, "Boy, it's going to be great skiing tomorrow. You guys came at the right time, because supposedly we're going to get 16 inches of snow, of powder, overnight." Well, overnight we slept, and then we start hearing drip, drip, drip. We started hearing raindrops. So when we woke up Friday morning, and Auntie Lucy, you know, well, Stephanie's only skier, so we just tagged along, all right? So, brought her up to the slope, to the lift, and found out everything was closed. Then, we just hung out, you know, for the day, had some good family time on Friday. Then Saturday, she tried again, which was yesterday, right? Saturday was yesterday, yeah. So early in the morning, she woke up, she says, "Let's go. The trails are open, there's 62 trails open." So Auntie Lucy took her there. And since we're not skiers, we didn't, you know, bother. So after like maybe 45 minutes, she called us. She says, "It's just too icy. It's too dangerous." She says, "Why don't you pick me up? We'll go home early." So we drove home early yesterday. Now, as we drove through Albany, some of you may know where Albany is, we passed through miles and miles of beautiful winter wonderland. Ice coated tree limbs, glistening in the sun, it looks great. But you know what? You know what? 500,000 homes without power. And this morning, before I woke up, I happened to tune to a radio station from Albany that these old men and women, they didn't have any power in the home, in the trailer park, in the motorhome. So what they did was, in the daytime, they went to shelter, and then at night, they tried to stay in their cars to keep warm. So underneath that beautiful winter wonderland, there's plenty of pain and suffering. I know now it's Thanksgiving, I know it's Christmas, good times, happy times, especially for kids, right? College students. Any of you college students? None? Okay, well, my son came home already. He had an easy time as a freshman. He didn't have any finals, so he came home. I know the college students are looking forward to coming home, and then you high schoolers are like looking forward to your more than 10 days off, right, from school. But I think that we need to look at the reality of it, okay? The reality is that things don't look too good right now. Some of you younger guys, you probably wouldn't be impacted, but for those of us who are working, and we realize the economy, okay, the world is suffering, going through this global economic crisis. The stock market goes up and goes down. It was never like this. If you talk to your parents, and they'll tell you about the home prices, whether it has gone up or go down. For those of us who have worked, that has 401k pension, If you have stock portfolio, you probably lost 30-40% this year. And the news said just in November alone, over 500,000 jobs were lost in the United States. The most job loss in 34 years. I don't want to talk about that this morning. You know, I sense something more disturbing. Now, I'm not pessimistic. I'm not a pessimistic person. I'm quite optimistic. But I'm afraid to look ahead to the future. Let's say 60 years from now, 70 years from now. I wonder how the world will be like then. Now, for sure, at my age, in 60, 70 years, I will be with Lord Jesus already. I won't be around to see it. Now, but some of you guys who are in the teens, right? You guys are in the teens, okay? In 60 years, you'll be in the 70s. You'll be around. You ever wonder how the world will be like by then? You know, one thing I can think of, maybe the children in those days would not have to go to school for classes anymore. All they do is get up in the morning, turn on the computer, and then they can go to class. You only go to school for activities, when you have projects, when you have sports, when you have concerts. That's the time you go to school. You can just go to school and learn whatever you need to learn on your computer. Wouldn't that be great? No? You don't think that's great? I don't think you want to go to school, do you? Okay. Well, you want to go to school for your friends. I understand that. But you can, you know, meet your friends in other venues. But we live in historic times. You may not realize. We really live in historic times. You, the younger ones, I call the I generation. I stands for information, which means you don't really have much information. You don't care about news or whatever. I also stand for internet, which every one of you are so good at. See, if it were not this I generation, I era, we wouldn't be having this global economic crisis. Because any little ripple in the economic news is being accentuated. It's being blown up. Things that would take months or years to happen can happen overnight because this information is spread out the whole world within seconds, within minutes. So basically, what we're seeing is that this information era has compressed the scale of time. But I think I sense something more worrisome to me, okay, than this economy thing, than this global crisis. Because in the middle 18th centuries, right, the Industrial Revolution, it brings about a lot of changes in society, in economy. But this information era not only brings about changes in our society and our information, it brings about physiological changes. I read in the internet and I heard on the radio some researchers at UCLA, they did a study on how the internet affects the users. So they do, you know, imaging on the brain, right? The activities, when you have a lot of activity in certain areas, it lights up. Okay? So they looked at when people read books, certain area, the front part of the brain lit up. Then if these people go online, if they're not used to like the computer, they go online and they do some work on the internet, you know, the same area lit up. Nothing much different. But then when you guys go online, well, when you guys read a book, the same area lights up, the front part where you make decisions, where you think, light up. But when you guys go online, you have a twofold activation in those areas. That means your brain is really going fast. All right? Now, what it happens is that they say, as you use the internet, Your brain is being remapped. Your brain is really being rewired. You have physiological changes when you use the internet. This person even said, this professor even said, he sees that down the road, you have little sensors in your brain. Let's say if you want to invite your friends to meet at Starbucks, you don't have to call them. You don't have to email them, because your little sensor is going to beam that thought to your friend's sensor. It's kind of scary, isn't it? He said that when you and your spouse sit at a table and eat, you don't really have to talk anymore, because whatever you're thinking is, your little sensor will beam that to your spouse. Well, heck, that's the same way that Auntie Lucy and I have dinner. We don't talk that much. There's no need, you know? It's scary. I hope that doesn't come true. But you know what? The internet, the computer is doing certain things to us that I don't really like to see. But the fact is, and the challenge is, it's going to happen. It's how we as Christians can adapt to a new world, and yet we can continue to have Christ in our heart, to have God in our heart. And it's difficult. Just like in Killington, the last 2 days, I would be in my room and I'd go out to the TV, where the TV was, and everything was quiet. No talk, no nothing. Then I looked. Auntie Lucy was looking at her laptop. Stephanie was on her laptop. Jonathan was on his laptop. And the only sound I hear was Jonathan, or John I call him, giggling at his laptop because he was looking at Facebook, whatever. You know, there's no more interaction. And you know what? That's bad, okay? As Christians, the challenge to us in the new year is, how are we going to deal with that? And how do we maintain our relationship with God? There's something even worse. I'm afraid that this era has a negative impact on our spirituality. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census be made. So Joseph went up from Nazareth to Bethlehem. And he went up with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and expecting a child. While they were there, she gave birth to her firstborn, a son, wrapped him in cloths, placed him in a manger, because there was no room in the inn. So the question is, in this new world, in this 2008-2009, do you have room in your heart? In your heart for Jesus? Back in September, Auntie Lucy and I went down to see her sister, Diane. She was a professor. She is a professor, and she got promoted. She didn't tell us, but you know, we were surprised when we got there. She invited us there because she was promoted to be an associate professor. So she took us for a treat to this restaurant, a 4-star restaurant. It's a fancy restaurant, a local restaurant. So we went in. Very nice. Nice atmosphere, candlelit dinner. We had a good time. Then when it came time to leave, I said, okay, let me use the bathroom. Now, I know a lot of you haven't gone to Chinatown that often. But if you do, if you go to the restaurants in Chinatown and you go to the bathroom, you understand that that's not the best place you want to be. So I went in there and I was shocked. this nice restaurant, nice food, tablecloth, this bathroom is, you don't have to move. You just stand around. Here's the sink. You turn around. That's the toilet. All right? You turn around. Oh, that's where you get your paper. It's so tiny. It doesn't fit the restaurant. Do we have room in our heart for Jesus? You say yes? Is that the presidential suite in your heart? Is that the room with the ocean view in Maui? Or is that the room with a ocean view in Miami, in Florida? Or where I was in Killington, Vermont, a nice view of all the ski trails coming down? Or is it a deluxe room? Or maybe a standard room that you put a bed in and a desk, and then you don't have much room to walk around. Yeah, I envision we have different compartments in our heart, right? You know, there are rooms for, let's say, worries. For you younger ones, you don't have much worry. There's not much to worry about. I don't think you worry about school. I think you may worry about your friends liking you or not liking you. So I would say that if you look at the stage, right, you have a small area for worries. But when you get older, you worry about your job, you worry about your family, you worry about your health. I have a pretty big area for worries. Memories. We have room for memory. Fond ones. I have fond memory. I have bad memories too. I still dreamt about the days when I was at college going for my doctorate degree that my professor didn't really like me that much. That I had trouble with my research. I had memories. When you get older, you also get more memories. A big one, a big compartment for hurts. When people say nasty things to you. I think you have that, whether you're old or young. When people cut your car off. When we didn't get what we want, we're angry at God. When we're disappointed, I have a pretty big compartment for that also. And we have needs, right? We have an area for needs. We need fun. We don't have to worry about food, but we need friends. We need love. We need to be praised. We need to be acknowledged. And we need to be accepted. They're different compartments. Compartment for our dreams. When you're younger, you have a bigger area for dreams. When you're older like me, I have a tiny place for dreams. Because either my dreams have come true, or not, I realize that they're not going to come true. I've given up. Young people, you have a big compartment for this, an empty room, where you don't do anything. You don't get focused. You are surfing the net. You're playing the video game that you're not using. Thinking. That's a big empty space. You have that. But what does Prophet tell us? Do not forget my teaching. Keep my commands in your heart. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. So where are God's teaching in your heart? Where are God's commands in your heart? Love and faithfulness and our trust for God. Where are those things in our heart? Let's say even if it's in your heart, how big a compartment is left for that? Maybe proportionally, like the size of that men's room in the restaurant? Actually, you know, there's a reason, because for a restaurant, right, every section is considered as profit centers. They make money when they have customers. So they want to have the biggest area, biggest percentage of the area for the dining. They try to squeeze in as many tables as possible, as many chairs. And they need a kitchen which is enough to take care of the customers. The bathroom is an afterthought. So they put the smallest area for the bathroom. That makes sense. So where is the compartment that we have for Christ? Is that front and center? Or is it all the way in the back, in a dark area of our heart? The importance, right? The bigger the area, that means it's more important for us. And then the smaller the area, the least important for us. And only we know ourselves where we put Jesus in our heart, where we put all the teachings, where we put all the commands. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your might, with all your soul, with all your mind. Where is that in our heart? Is it in our heart? Unless we realize that it is something important for us, we're not going to be keeping in our heart, right? Unless we realize that everything we do in this world is temporal, things that go and pass away. The only thing that's relevant to us is, as the first song that we sang, take us to a place with no time, no worries, no hurry. Our eternity is the only thing that is relevant for us. Everything else is temporal and go away. You have your friends. This year you have a number of friends. Next year you have the same friends plus or minus a few more. But when you go to college, you have a new set of friends. We start to work, you have a new set of friends. The only thing that's relevant is that we have God in our heart and our relationship with God. So I wouldn't be surprised that, including myself, a lot of us, we have a bigger compartment for our worries, for our memories, for our hurts, for our needs, for our dreams. And a tiny, tiny area for God's teaching, His commands, our love for Him, faithfulness for Him, our trust for Him. Do not forget my teaching. Who are the musicians here? Oh, there are some, you're probably modest. When you play a piece, right, how don't you forget? When you go to recital, you have to play the whole piece. How don't you forget? You don't forget because you keep playing and practicing and practicing and practicing, right? It's just the same. You may say you have God's teaching in your heart. You have God's command in your heart. But if you don't practice, if you don't live it out, you don't have a new heart. When you go to a basketball game, when you go to a high school basketball game, and you can tell the good teams from the bad teams, you realize the players, they see somebody do something, they do something. The coach may diagram a play, you go here, he goes there, there goes there. You can see that they are just following the play. It's not in their heart. In your heart means you don't have to think about it. Automatic. You run the play at practice enough times that you get good at it, that everything is just one smooth motion, and you can't separate from whether you are like thinking about it or already doing it. When you have written, when you have love and faithfulness written on the tablet in your heart, you don't have to think, oh, how am I going to show my love for this person? How am I going to, what kind of gifts do I buy for Christmas or birthday? You already automatically know what you can do to show your love and your faithfulness. Trust with all our heart. Trust with all our hearts. That means Christ is in our whole heart. Doesn't mean that we have him in the back of our inn. In every room in our inn, in every compartment of our heart, Christ is there. We have worries, Christ is there, we will find rest in him. We have set memories in that compartment, Christ can comfort us. If we have needs and Christ is there, he will provide us. If we have hurts, the compartment of hurt, Christ can heal our hurt. So it's wrong for us to think that we only put Christ in a certain room, whether it's a big room or a small room. But what we need to do is have Christ in every compartment of our heart, that he is in our heart. The problem is, life is good these days. When I grew up, I didn't have no telephone, I didn't have CDs, I didn't have a TV, I didn't have a phone in my home until I was your age, teenagers. But no, now you have your iPhones, you have your cell phones, you have your high-def TV, you have your IM, you have your Facebook, you have your text message, and you have all your downloads and ringtones. You have your YouTube. It's good, right? The problem is, you know, this era hasn't just changed us physiologically. It has converted our life into a multitasking life. You may be doing your homework on your computer. Oh, here comes a message. I am from some friend. Answer him. Get back to your work. Oh, here comes another message from another friend. Answer him. You know, some of the younger people at church try to IM me. Okay? And I answer them back. And then later on, here comes another message. Uncle Felix, you're no fun. You're boring. You don't talk fast enough for us. Back and forth, back and forth. We'll be driving and then go, John has a text message for a friend. Oh, that's cool. Answer him right back. Multitasking. You're doing so many things at the same time. You know what that does to you? I noticed this generation of youth definitely lack of focus, short attention span. Because you're doing all these things. You can't focus on one thing. And then you got to do something all the time. That ends up that you have a very short attention span. Now, parents, we don't have too many parents here. We have to be blamed too. Because we want our kids to be high achievers. I include myself. We want them to do well in school. I didn't expect my children to get all straight A's, but, you know, they can try better. Then they have their sports. Then they have their piano. Then we complain. Oh, I'm so tired. I keep driving them back and forth to all the sports activity. Oh, you know, all the piano lessons, practices and all that, the recitals. We complain. But deep down, we're happy. We're happy. Because our children are doing well. They're high achievers. They're not only good in school, but they're also well-talented, well-rounded. They're in music, they're in sports. But the problem is, they're going to be doing their homework in the car, they're going to be doing their homework in the gym, and then they're answering their emails and the texts at the same time. Multitasking. We're training our brains to be doing all these things. But where is Jesus in all this? When you're busy answering your emails, doing your homework, answering your cell phone, your text messages, where is Jesus in all this? By the time you go to bed, it's 1 o'clock, it's 1:30. All night long, have we thought about what we can do for Christ? Where is Jesus in our life? I can't talk about for you, I can tell about myself. No, I haven't thought one second of God. So life is good, but the cost to us that we didn't realize is tremendous. Verse 2, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. Prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. We want that, don't we? Yeah, we want that. Verse 4, we'll win favor and good name in the sight of God and men. I want that. I want to be seen favorably by God. And more importantly, by men. Verse 6, he will make your path straight. Yeah, I want that too. Straight path. No trouble. Following God. We all want all these things, but we didn't realize that in order to get all these things, we have to remember his teaching, keep his commands in our heart, love and faithfulness, bind them around our neck, and write them on the tablet of our heart, and our trust in the Lord with all our heart. If we don't do that, then we're not going to have the things we want. So we just have to remember that there's a challenge living in this world today. That we have to realize that all these things changes, but our relationship with God cannot change. I don't want to be pessimistic. Last Sunday, we had a basketball practice, and one of the players, if you meet him, he always, always has an angry look on his face. Never smiles. I've never seen him smile. I know I almost said his name. I never seen him smile. But I realize in dealing with all the youths I come into contact, they are the result of their upbringing. He wasn't, you know, raised by his own parents. They sent him to another place, you know, to be raised. He never explained to me why. So at the practice, he was really upset because people ran into him, knocked him down. The floor was slippery. So at one point, he took the basketball and he slammed it. And I said, whoa, that's not cool. But I didn't want to talk to him in front of everybody. I was going to pull him aside. I would see him in during the week, so I was going to talk to him one-on-one. But to my surprise, Monday, here comes an email from him to the whole team. He apologized. He said it was wrong. So I sent a message back to him. I said, I'm happy that you did that. You apologized. It takes courage to apologize. So many times we run away from our troubles. I told him, I said, 6 months ago, you wouldn't have apologized. I met him at church in a week. I said, 6 months ago, you wouldn't have apologized. And he looked at me, he didn't say anything. He knew I was right. So there's hope with us. But the main thing is we need to realize what the world is like, and we are not. We are not of the world. We may be in the world, but we're not of the world. We don't have to conform. So remember what is important. Not to forget his teaching. Keep his commands in our heart. Bind love and faithfulness around our neck. Write them on the tablet of our heart. And to trust the Lord with all our heart. Then I can say, you have room in your inn for Jesus.